And we are holding on some Alafoma days right after the Mishnah. Hello? No, we actually started right at 8:30. I was only just saying where we're up to anyway. Okay, so we learned the Mishnah yesterday. So to recap, the Mishnah had mentioned the machloikus of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether if you burn somebody's sack of grain, and inside it there were hidden kalim, what kind of kalim will be yours in the Gemara. So Rabbi Yehuda says you have to pay for them, and the Chachamim say you just pay as if that space was filled up with wheat or barley or what have you. Yeah. Then it mentioned the case about the goat that tied to it versus the eved next to it or vice versa. But that we already dealt with the details of that earlier in the Sefta about Talmud Dinavimine, et cetera. So the Gemara doesn't really deal with that angle of it over here. And then the Mishnah finishes off that the Chachamim do agree if a person burns down a building that he is chayev for whatever is inside there because people normally keep stuff in buildings. So. The Gemara says, "Amar Kahana, machloikus b'madlik b'seich shaloi v'ochla b'seich shachaveres." The machloikus in the Mishnah is only in the case where you lit the fire in your own property, and then it spread and ended up burning things in the other person's property. Namely, that in that case, Rabbi Yehuda machayev aniske tamen ve'esh for rabbanu pachi. That would be the case where Rabbi Yehuda says, "I'm machayev you for tamen," because as we said the other day, even though you have the pasuk. Hakoma, he used it for something else. He just balik koima, anything that stands independently, not to teach us anything about Talmud. And the Chachamim would say you're potter because they learned oyakoma to mean that just like standing grain is exposed, so it has to be something exposed.
Koma means open.
Koma means standing grain. So standing grain usually is just out there in the open. Yeah. So that's what Kahana is saying. That's if you lit it in your own property, which you have the right to light a fire in your own property, you were careless with it and it spread. But if you lit the fire of Hatzchila in the other person's property, now we're not even necessarily talking about that you literally went, you know, intending to commit arson. It's not like you were necessarily intending to literally burn. No, it could be, for example, that, you know, you lit a bonfire, let's say, you know, you wanted to roast some hot dogs or whatever, you know. So let's say instead of doing it on your own, you did it in his backyard. We're not necessarily talking about that you were actually going specifically intending to burn down his property. But anyway, so if you lit it in the other person's property, then everybody would agree that you pay for everything for everything that was in it.
And if you put pieces very close to one another,
it doesn't matter. I mean, you have your property and there's the other guy's property. It's still, you know. Yeah. So Tosfos discusses what is Rav Kahana saying? Does he mean, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon, for example, when you get to a question of a haystack, you can consider what could be hidden inside a haystack. There could be, as we'll talk about soon, farm tools, which is typical to have hidden inside a haystack, or there could be a wallet in there, which is a very untypical thing. It sounds like the point of Rav Kahana that Rabbanon would agree, no matter what was inside the haystack, as long as you lit it in that guy's reshus, you're going to be chayav for it, even if it was something very unusual to be in there. So we'll get back to that soon when we get to what Rava says. Amalei Rava, ihachi, if you're going to say like that, abitoni sefer, then consider, I mean, so the sefer of the Mishnah continues. The Mishnah had started out a case where you set somebody's grain on fire, and then it continued with the case of where you set a house on fire. So when the Mishnah continues, Modim Chachamim would be heard of Mazik Zabira, that if you set a building on fire, Shemeshalam Komash Basurfa, that then you pay everything for everything that is in the building, Shaken Derach B'Adam Laniach B'Batim, because it's normal for people to put things in their houses. If you're going to say the way you're saying that even in the case of a stack of grain, there can be a case where you're going to be chayav for things in there, namely if you lit it in his reshus to begin with, lift like the list nibbity duh. Then instead of bringing in the separate case of a house, the Mishnah could have continued and made a distinction within the Mishnah could have continued making a distinction within the stack of grain itself. But sometimes the Chachamim will be saying you're potter for tamun, and sometimes they'll be saying you're chayav. Namely,
if you say,
Rav Kahana is saying, again, Tosfos is understanding that Rav Kahana is saying that whatever there was whatever there was inside this Gaddish, you're going to be chayav for if you lit the fire in his property. Well, if that's the case, then instead of the Mishnah mentioning, so if you burned down his haystack, then the Chachamim say you're potter. If you burn down his house, then if you burn down his house, you'll be chayav for everything that was in there. Within a haystack itself, it could be making a distinction. If you set the fire in your property and it spread to his haystack, you'll be potter for Chachamim. Whereas if you lit it in his property and it spread to the haystack, then you'll be chayav for Chachamim. The Mishnah could be making a distinction that way. The Mishnah, we would assume the Mishnah is, if the Mishnah wants to explain that distinction between lighting it in your property versus in the other person's property, there's no reason to mention two completely disjoint cases, one where there's a haystack and the other where there's a house. According to Rav Kahana, forget even about a house. All you need to mention is in the case of a haystack, there can be a case where you'll be chayav.
The case would be good.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Right. So, in other words, we don't need
the sefer. In other words, the sefer could have been also about a haystack, about a stack of grain, not about a house. And it could have been telling us, even with a stack of grain, sometimes you will be chayav for what's inside. So it should say like that. When is this applied that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda about Tamun? Is if you lit the fire in your property and it went and consumed in the other person's property? But if you lit the fire to begin with in his rishus, then everybody would agree that you pay for everything, and then it doesn't need to mention the house. Then we would understand from that when we say everything, we mean literally everything. We mean no matter what there is. That's the thing. The Tosfos explains there's two different ways of understanding what Rav Kahana is saying. One way of looking at it is Rav Kahana is saying you're obligated to pay for whatever is normally inside something. So therefore, in the case of a house, that would be anything. In the case of a sack of grain, that would be farm tools, but not necessarily wallet. Or he might mean that regardless, so either way, if you lit the fire in the other guy's property, you're chayav for everything. Well, we'll learn. Yeah, well, we're going to learn soon. Only things that you expect him to have in the house. The only things that based on his known financial circumstances that you.
Everything.
No, there's everything. Anything that can normally be expected to be in his house. Yeah.
Again, it's not everything.
No,
We're going to talk later.
The concept of Takanas Nigzol, and we're going to relate it to the case of a fire as well. Wait. We'll see. There's going to be to a certain extent we take him at his word. But wait. Anyway, Ella Amar Rava B'Tauti Pligi. So no, Rava says actually that's not the way to explain the Mishnah. What it is actually there are actually two different machlokes in that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are having. Number one, they're arguing about a case where you lit the fire in your property and it spread to the other guy's property. Where there, Rabbi Yehuda Machayev Atomun Ba'esh, Verabon and Savri Lechayev. There, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, you're Chayev for Tomun, the Chacham say you're Potter, because there's a Potter. That's Machlokas number one. And then, on top of that, they have a separate Machlokas, what happens if you light the fire in his Rishus? Namely, that then we would say, when Rabbi Yehuda says you're obligated to pay for everything in that case, so already, when you lit it in your own resource, you're already chayav for tamun. But on top of that, if you were even more negligent than that, because there's a difference. Rashi explains the reason is there's a difference because one is negligence versus one is negligence, one is kima'abed b'yadayim. If you light the fire in your property and it spreads, that's just you were negligent. You didn't take care of your fire properly. If you light a chila in the other guy's property, Rashi uses the word b'havi kima'abed b'yadayim. You're destroying it with your bare hands. Which is why, by the way, I mean, it can't mean that he's literally trying to set things on fire over there, because then it's not Kima Abubiyadayim, it is Ma Abubiyadayim. In other words, he's not deliberately an arsonist, but he lit a fire on the...
If he's not the fire on the property, what else is he got to
know? No, but an arsonist would mean he deliberately wants to burn down that guy's guy. No, listen. Let me talk. It means that he did deliberately light a fire in the other guy's shirt. His intention was not that it would spread to the sack of grain or the house or what have you. That happened because he was careless. But the very fact that he lit a fire in the other guy's shirt itself is Ma'abed B'Yadayim. That itself gives him a stronger culpability than if he had just lit it in his property and then it spread. That's it. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying like this, says Rava. Even if he lights it in his own property, then he's going to be chayev for tamun if it spreads to the other guy's property. But there, we're only going to obligate him for tamun for things that are normally inside there. For example, in the case of a haystack, farm tools. But then now you have the other case, mablik, the shel chaveri. If you light it in the other person's property, there you have another machlokes. Even you would have to pay for if there was a purse of money in there, you would also be chayev. But Rabbanan Sabri, and then Rabbanan say, okay, I agree you're going to be more chayev in that case, but only, Kalim Shadarsim, Mahatmin Begadish, you're only going to be chayev for things that are normally hidden inside a haystack. When Merigin or Clay Bakr, for example, Merigin is sledges that are used for threshing, or Clay Bakr is implements that are used with the cattle, like prods or whatever. Kudu Mashalim, those are the kind of things you would have to pay for. Kalim Shane Darkam Ahman, but they're Shlomo Shalom, whereas things that are not normally hidden in a haystack, the Rabbanon would say, even in that case, you're not going to be obligated to play to pay for.
It's amazing.
Why?
Because
okay.
In the other guy's shoes, this guy had nothing to do in the other guy's shoes, and he's patur of the kidding that are not usually
because he couldn't have expected that there would be an anarchy in there.
If he lights in some apples or shoes, he has to expect that.
He can't expect that the other guy has his purse hidden.
He doesn't expect anything.
No, he doesn't have to expect anything. Okay, so there is actually the Ramban discusses let me see if I remember it. The Ramban discusses what's the logic? Why should he be positive just because he didn't know the thing was there?
He didn't want to know.
But the fact of the matter is you can't have expected. He couldn't have known. But I'm trying to remember what the Ramban explained. What he explains about it. Let me see. I looked it up before I came here, but now I've forgotten it. So let me see if I can find it quickly. Okay, so here, the Ramban explains it like this. The case, I found it online. The case is, imagine you have, there's no edim available. Okay, so the Gemara is going to talk soon. The Gemara is going to talk later on Tanakh Beis, about to what extent do we believe the person when he claims something, for example, in the case of a house. So again, you know, like we were just talking a minute ago, he could be claiming that he had, that he had anything in there. Can you necessarily take him at his word? So we're going to talk about that. So the question is, the question is over here, if there were no witnesses, well, that's the question. If there were witnesses that there was a purse in there and then he burned it, sure, he's going to be chayav. The question is, if there are no witnesses, to what extent even if it's something that's not normally there, if there were witnesses, if you can find witnesses afterwards that there was a person there, sure, you're going to be chayav. The Gemara is not saying that, but that's how the Ramban understands it. The question is, if there's no witnesses, to what extent do we accept this argument? To what extent do we accept this claim of the Nizik that in fact there was a purse with money in there? So that's the thing that Ramban learned. If the Chachamim would say, if he claims that there were farm tools in there, okay, that's something to be expected. You don't need Aedis for that. But if he's going to claim there was a person, if you're going to claim there was a purse in there, then you need Aedim in order to substantiate it. Otherwise we can't be mechai of you on the basis of no Aedim, just on the basis of what the Nizik said. So the difference is still that in a sod, so according to the Ramban, the difference would be that in a bira, you... That's the thing. Rava is saying there's two different machlokes. What? No. So you have two machlokes. In one where it was b'mablik b'ser shaloi and b'ser shalchaver, right? That's where Rabbi Yehuda is saying, where Rabbi Yehuda is the chai of you for the kalim that were in the Gaddish and the chomim apater in you. And the other case is, if you remember, where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that in the case of a house, and also in the case of a goddish, Mishalim Kol Mashiv Asecha, you would pay. So a house and a goddish would be the same thing as far as that goes, yeah. So,
because that's now before you came.
No, he's been here the whole time. No, it still needs to mention a bira because in order to point out that the Chachamim agree partially with that, they don't agree with them completely. They're not going to say that in the case that we agree that in the case of a bira you're going to be chayav for everything. We don't agree that in the case of a goddess you're going to be chayav for everything. What? In a bira, they would say anything that's normally in there. So in a goddess it would be rigging a clay bocker, and in a house it would be anything that he omud, anything that we can expect that he has in the house. No, I don't know.
Yeah. Usual for a house. Usual
for a right. But in other words, the point is the Mishnah couldn't have continued a point of Rava with a case of a goddish, because then it wouldn't be clear what are the Chachamim being murdered to. We're being murdered Meriginu Klei Bakar. Fine, but Rabbi Yehuda holds it's more than Meriginu Klei Bakar. He also holds Anarchy. If when he mentioned a house where therefore it's everything, then it makes it clear that it means anything that's normally in a house, and therefore by analogy we can understand that by the goddess it also means that they would agree anything which is normally put in a goddess is what they agree to, but no more than that. So there is also, by the way, Marshall does seem to understand that we are actually talking about the person intended to burn down the pile of grain, and therefore he argues for a distinction similar to what Tosfos says, that there can be a difference whether we're talking about Pshia or whether we're talking about Mazik Viadayim, namely that if it was Pshia, we're going to be more lenient on him, and therefore he couldn't have expected that there'd be a wallet in there. If he had known there was, he would have been more careful with his own fire, therefore you can pass it. Whereas when he's intending to burn down the stack of grain, then you've got to be more Mazik. When he lit the fire in his rishus versus when he lit it in the other guy's rishus. So apparently the Marshal is understanding, not like I was saying before, that we actually are talking about he actually intended to burn down the stack of grain in the other guy's rishus. When he lit the fire in his own rishus and it just spread, that's just pshia as opposed to mazik v'yadayim. And therefore the Marshal says that's the logic. Therefore you should be more, therefore that's what Tosfos is saying. Therefore there's logic to be more lenient on him. He couldn't have expected that there'd be a wallet in there. Therefore pass to him for the wallet. Turn it up on him. We learn it up right. Hamadlik is a goddess vayuba kelim v'doh. If somebody lights a stack of grain on fire and there were kelim in it and they burnt, Rabbi Yehuda and Mishalim Kol Mashiv Asecha. Rabbi Yehuda says that you pay for everything that was in it. So you pay for the value of the kelim. V'chamam and Mishalim al goddess shochet and a goddess shosod. And the Chum say you just pay the value of a stack of wheat or barley. V'royin mokum kelim kilo molichvur. You imagine the space where the kelim were as if it was full of tzvur. You don't consider it as empty space. So you're not totally potter for the value of the kelim, but you're getting a big discount. Bamed v'namamurim. When is this talking about the madlik v'sech shaloi v'holch v'dok v'sech shavei? Right? When you lit the fire in your own property and then it spread to the other person's property. Av a madlik v'sech shavei. Diver hakol mashalim kol mashalei v'sech. But if you lit it in the other person's property, everybody would agree that you pay for everything that was inside. Now, what do we mean by diver hakol? The Rava would have to explain that it doesn't mean that it doesn't mean anything that was in it. It means only kelim shadar from mahatman, only madrigan or clay bucket or farm tools. Tosfos learns differently. Everything that's usual, right? Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos is not gurus the word diver hakol, and they understand it to be saying that the chachamim are saying that they're explaining themselves that. Again, it kind of amounts to the same thing. It's just instead of divrei hakol that both the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda would say this, that the chachamim themselves are explaining with this bamed v'ram amurim that what kind of things are we talking about that will be mechay of you? When are we saying that will pass to you for what was inside the stack of grain? Only if it was madlik v'shaloi. If you madlik v'sesh v'chaveri, we will be mechay of you for those things. Umayyad Rabbi Yehuda l'chachamim. Now, conversely, Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the chachamim. The mashal makam l'chaver l'hagdish. If somebody lends a space in his field for somebody else to stack his grain, l'hagdish gadish, to make a stack, a pile of grain, the higdish, and he made a pile of grain there, the hitmin, and he hid things inside that pile. She'en mashalam elot me gadish bilvad. Then, if the owner of the field who lit a fire in his own rishus, which he has the right to do, it's his own rishus. And, okay, he accepted on himself, as we learned before, when you say to somebody, come stack your grain in my field, it includes the idea also, I'll watch it for you, but he only expected to watch the actual Gaddish. Again, he couldn't have known that there was anything hidden inside it. Therefore, even Rabbi Huda agrees that he's only going to pay for the value of the Gaddish.
And not the cave.
So in other words, so far you have three distinctions. You have when you lit it in your rishus and it spread to the other guy's rishus. We have where you lit it in the other guy's rishus to begin with. And here you have the opposite. You lit it in your rishus, but the other guy's stack of grain is in your rishus. You gave him permission, obviously, yeah. Furthermore,
when you tell him, when he sees shit in your rishus and you tell him you're going to light a fire, does it change anything?
I don't know. If he knows you're going to light a fire, maybe he'll find somebody to guard his goddess or whatever. I don't know. Maybe he'll tell you that I expect you to take extra care. Whatever it is. I mean, if he tells you there's someone in there, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Furthermore, lahagdish chitin vihigdish sardin, what if you gave the person permission to make a pile of wheat and instead he put a pile of barley, or sa'urin v'higdish chitin, or you gave him permission to put barley and instead he put wheat, or chitin v'chipan v'sa'urin, or you gave him permission to put wheat and he put wheat covered with an outer layer of barley, or sa'urin v'chipan v'chitin, the other way around, he made a pile of barley and covered it on the outside with one layer of wheat. In all those four cases, Shein Mashalam Elav Mei Sarin Bovad. In all those cases, he would only pay for the value of the barley. Because in each of these cases, when he gave him permission to put wheat and he put barley, well, okay, all he put there is barley. You can't charge him for more than that. When he told him you can put barley and instead he put wheat, he only accepted responsibility for the value of barley. He wasn't willing to accept responsibility for the value of wheat. And if it's one covered with the other, he can say, for example, if it's wheat covered with barley, okay, even I gave you permission for wheat, let's say. It doesn't have to be that I only gave you permission for barley. However, when I looked at the stack, all I saw was barley, so that's all I thought it was. Again, I didn't know to be so careful as I would have been had it been wheat, which is more expensive.
Why don't we say nezek shen and nikar?
Because nezek shen and nikar is not that. Nezek shen and nikar is when it's only a ruchni stick in nezek. When the actual physical object itself is unchanged. Here, the actual physical object is a stack of grain, just changed, which is now ashes. Tosfos points out that, again, all of this has to be talking about, still, you're talking about that you gave the other person permission to put up his gaddish in your field. If it was the case where you lit a fire in your own field and spread to the other guy's field, wouldn't matter. If what ended up getting burnt down was a pile of wheat, you're going to have to pay a pile of wheat, et cetera, even if you thought that it was only barley. Yeah. If somebody gives a woman a gold dinner, why dafka a woman? One thing they explain is because we had cases over and over in Kedushin where somebody gives a woman money and says that it's actually, so therefore, like, you know, it's a common turn of phrase in the Gemara and therefore it uses that also. So a person gives a woman or anybody a gold dinner, he tells her be careful with it, he tells her be careful with it, it's silver. So she doesn't realize, in other words, she doesn't realize that's gold. She was under the impression that's silver. And actually, Steinsaltz mentions, I don't remember where he got this from.
Unless it's covered with silver. But
no, but it could be tarnished, I don't know, whatever. But Steinsaltz mentioned, I don't remember what he says his source is, that maybe also the reason he mentions a woman is because women usually do less commerce, so they may not be as familiar
women
with the difference.
Tachshitin, they would know what's gold.
Tachshitin are shiny. Coins could have been used for the last 100 years, and they're silver. Whatever. Anyway.
Man also still see wouldn't make a difference.
Yeah, but men are more engaged in commerce, so they'll know based on the weight of it, whatever, and gold weighs more than silver, whatever. No, okay, we're talking about another thing. Okay, anyway. Okay, so he tells her that's silver. So she's under the impression that's silver. Hizikatu, if she actually damaged the coin, Mishalemet dinar zahav, then she actually has to pay the value of a gold dinar. Mishum do omala, because then he has the ability to tell her, my have a lachabe, das akte, what do you have against it that you were mazik it? Fine, you didn't know that it was gold. You had no business being mazik it. So therefore, you're responsible for gold. On the other hand, pasha boy, but if she was just careless with it, she didn't take good care of it, the difference is, by the way, Rashi says the difference between this and the case of the fire that we were just talking about, the difference is, again, the fire is not a mazik v'yadayim. He didn't actually go and set the other person's stack of grain on fire. He just lit a fire in his reshus and it spread. Here we're talking about she was actually mazik the coin. So therefore she'd be chayav for the full value. Mazik it, I don't know, she bent it, she broke it, she whatever. Whatever the intent was, doesn't matter. No, negligence is Shia. She wasn't careless with it in the sense she lost it, for example.
So that with it dead, mazik?
Mazik means that she actually did something to the coin itself. Yeah, it doesn't matter what her intention was. The point is the actual coin itself was damaged.
And
Shia is she was careless and she lost it. Oh yeah, she actually says yeah. Be a dime, she's her faster. She lacked the yam. Yeah, for example, she burnt it, she threw it into the sea. Yeah, that's mazik. As opposed to pasha, it's just she was careless. She didn't take good care of it and she dropped it. So mazik is that she actually did something deliberate. And yeah, and pasha, but then mishalom is shoketet. Then she only has to pay the value of a silver coin. Because then she has the ability to tell him nitirusa de kaspa kabili alai. I only accepted on myself the responsibility to take the amount of concern that I would take for a silver coin. Nitirusa de dava like kabili alai. I didn't accept on myself the responsibility for a gold coin, which is worth much more. So therefore, I can only be responsible for the silver. Whereas again, if she was mazikit, then you don't say that because regardless whether you knew it was silver or not, you have no business being mazikit.
It's a knas in a way.
Not really a knaf, no, it's a, you're banking
on
so she's just trying. Neighbor, she's potter anyhow. But if she's a Shem Chinam and neighbor, then she's potter anyhow, yeah.
Neighbor,
right? Shem Chinam is potter for everything. Everything except for Shia, yeah. But that's what we're saying, Pasha, by it. Omelet of Mordechai and Rav Ashi, so Mordechai says to Rav Ashi, Atun v'dirova mas nisulei. You in your yeshiva are learning this statement in the name of Rava. You're learning it as a member of Amoraim that Rava says. Anan mimasnisim shitalam. We in our yeshiva actually learn this, derive this from the Mishnah that we mentioned before. Chitin b'chitan b'sar, and sar b'chitan b'chitan. The case where you gave permission to somebody else to stack grain in your field, and it was wheat covered with barley, or barley covered with wheat. Einim shalom alav meisar in bovad, and you only pay the value of barley. Alma omale, which proves that the owner of the field is able to tell him the tirusa desari kabili alai. I only accepted on myself the amount of responsibility that would be appropriate for a stack of barley, which is cheaper. And not wheat, and therefore I can only be responsible for barley. Hachanami, in a similar way over here, again, lighting a fire in his field, which spreads to the Gaddish, is similar to Pshia, to being careless with the coin and dropping it. Therefore, Hachanami, I'm related to the Davila Kabili Alai, therefore, by analogy, she can also say I didn't take on myself the kind of responsibility that you take for a gold coin. So you can derive it from that blank. Amar Rav, Shamit Milsa Rav Yehuda, I heard a certain statement about what Rav Yehuda said, but I don't know what that statement is. This that Rav Yehuda said in the Mishnah that you're chayav for Tamun, Rav is saying there's a certain statement that I heard that goes together with that, but I don't know what it is. I'm a Shmuel, so Shmuel is surprised. How could Abba, which is Rab, not know what he heard? Either Abba, first of all, Abba was Rab's first name. There's a Gemara in Cholin, for example, that calls him Abba Aricha, tall Abba. Second of all, Abba is also a term of respect, because Rab was older than Shmuel, and yeah. So how could it be? He doesn't know. He should be able to figure out logically. That, what it is the Rav Yehuda de Mechayev on this case, Tamun Be'esh, that according to Rav Yehuda, that you Chayev for Tamun, yeah, there is a din, also Takonas Nigzol Be'ishay, that they applied the Takonah of Nigzol to the case of fire. Namely like this, there was a case the Gemara discusses in the Gemara discusses in Shavuos. It was in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam today or yesterday, that if a person's house was robbed, and he may not know there's no edim. Edim see that somebody is walking out of the house with something under his coat. They don't know what it was exactly. The balabas comes and claims that X, Y, and Z was stolen from me. The ganav is denying it. Now minat Torah, nothing would happen. You don't have any evidence. You don't have any edim clearly to say what was stolen. It's your word against his, basically. Midrabbanan, what? He's not going to be mixed either, right? Midrabbanan, they made a takana that this nigzel, this person who was robbed, is able to swear in Beis Din and be able to collect on that basis. B'chlal, any case where you have where somebody is able to swear and collect money, all those cases only midrabbanan. In Daraita, the only case where a person swears is to pastor himself from paying. Shomer, if the thing was lost or stolen or a couple of other cases. Murder mixtas is another one. There's never a case, minat Torah, where you swear in order to collect money. But midrabbanan, there are a number of such cases. This is one of them. So tekonas nigzel. So Gemara explains over there, and then Amnon brings it. There are details involved. There has to be that the edim saw the person walking out with something under his coat. If there's no edim, then you don't have tekonas nigzel, whatever. There's a bunch of details in it. But that's the basic concept. So we're saying Rabbi Yehuda would hold the same thing as far as fire. Namely, since we said before, according to Rava, that Rabbi Yehuda would say, regardless of what was in that stack of grain, the other person is going to be chayev if he lit the fire in your rishus. So even if there was a wallet inside there, Rabbi Yehuda would still say you're chayev. And according to Rav Kahana, we said two possibilities: whether he holds that in all cases or not. Anyway, the Chachamim made the same takana. If the person comes to Beis Din and claims that you lit a fire in my property, or you burnt down my stack of grain, whatever, and my wallet was in there, or other precious items were in there, Beis Din will tell him to swear, and if he does, then he can collect on that. Which actually, Tosfos points out, it's called takanas nigzel. The same takana that applies to a nigzel also applies to Ishoi, to where his stuff was burnt in a fire. Now, Tosfos points out that really, I mean, the same din does apply, because it's not only according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim, who say in the Mishnah that if you burn somebody's house, that you're chayiv for whatever was in there. So fine, you have the same basic takana applies in that case also, that you can claim what there was in the house. You know, like nowadays, when you file an insurance claim, you claim what there was in the house. Okay, I mean, nowadays they require photographs. They didn't have that in those days. But so you have takanas nigzel, you have the same kind of concept.
You swear.
Yes, you go to Beis Din, and you swear that you had X, Y, and Z. Now, again, the halacha is, that Amnon points out, it does have to be things that either, you know, based on the person's known financial circumstances, these are things he's likely to have in his house, or things that he's likely to have had as a pikkudin by him, things that you can expect. He himself may not own such things, but these are things that people are likely to have deposited with him for safety. If the guy's making $20,000 a year, that he's going to claim that he has a couple of Picassos in there, you know, not going to happen. That sort of thing. Rava said that even with a goddish, the Chachamim are only going to agree that you chayev for kalim shadarkan lias the goddish. So you don't need a shvur in that case. The maximum you'll have is clay buffer. You're not going to have anything that you could possibly claim. Does he need a shvur for the clay buffer? Could be. I don't know. Tosfos says that. Yeah. Tosfos says exactly that. Yeah. To also kind of a beautiful holdover of a goddess from Meridian. Yeah. It would be actually. So according to the Rabbanon, yeah. The point is, Tosfos says the reason why the Gemara associates it with Rabbi Yehuda is because according to him, it works even with a goddish, that you can have takanas nigzel for anything. Whereas again, according to the Rabbanan, the takanas nigzel would only apply to a certain limit, only tools inside a goddish or anything that's reasonable to have in a house. Well, yeah, Maimer. So now a Maimer asks a question related to this. Osotakonis nigzuba moser oloi. What about the case of a moser, somebody who informs to the government that somebody else has something in their possession that the government then comes and takes away? We'll learn in the last parak, we're going to learn a great deal about the dinim of Mesira. You know, nowadays we think of a Mesira as, you know, you snitch on somebody and they end up arresting him or whatever. Lav Davka, we were talking in those days about the person getting arrested, although as the Gemara will point out then, when we get there, there was a real concern in those days when governments didn't feel themselves bound as much by laws, that you get into the government's attention for any reason, they can trump up charges against you. That's the real concern about Mesira, as we'll deal with in the last session. But for our purposes, what we're dealing with here is that, for example, you know, the government is, let's say, looking for straw or wood or what have you, you know, some kind of resource that they need for their army or what have you, and everybody is looking around wherever they're going to find a storehouse of it. They're going to expropriate it. They're going to exercise eminent domain on it. And Reuben goes and shows them, here, Shimon has a storehouse of wood. Go take that. That's called a muscle. So now,
even if it's to a Jewish king.
No, we're talking about a Goyish government. But wait, we'll get to all the details of it in the last paragraph. Okay. So, do we make the same takana of a nigzal when it comes to a moser? Tosfos brings from the Rif. The case over here is there are edim that mesira was done. We do know the person lost a certain amount, lost some money. We don't know how much.
The government came and took his
wood or what have you, let's say. So now afterwards there are edim that Reuven actually showed them this, which makes him chayev as a moser. The problem is we don't know how much was actually lost. Tosfos themselves discusses that maybe not. There could be a few other. Rabbi Natan says that the case is where you could have the nimser, the one whose stuff was taken away, says it was X amount, and the moser says it was Y. It was a lesser amount. That's the question. Do we make a takanas nigzel in that case?
Takanas nigzel would be,
in other words, that again, the nigzel, the person whose stuff was taken, can come to Beit Din, swear that it was X amount, and he'll collect X. Again, according to Rabbeinu Tam, even if the moser is saying it wasn't X, it was some amount less than that. And then Tosfos brings a third explanation that it could be, let's say, the moser says, I don't know how much it was. Anyway. Because ultimately, you have to have the nimser have to say something. Otherwise, what are you collecting on the basis of? Fine, you can discuss, as we'll deal with in the last paragraph, is the moser himself chayiv misa, this, that, the other, we'll deal with that. But right now, we're dealing with the nimser has to be compensated. That's the point we're dealing with.
But why would it sure?
Because what else? You can't just you can't just come into Beis Din and claim without a shura. The moser.
Because a lot of people don't want to take a shvur.
If he doesn't want to take a shvur, that's his problem. But yeah, the moser was a low life and everything, fine and dandy. But first, you still need something more than the nimser's word in order to be able to collect. Otherwise, anybody's going to come to. Okay, whatever. Anyway, so also takonas nigzuba moser eloi. So regardless, according to these various explanations, do we have this takonas nigzal? Do we allow this nigzal to swear how much was lost and be able to collect on that basis? So, according to the opinion that we do not judge dinah degarmi, that we say the potter on dinah degarmi lo tiboyelach, the mysterious nami lo danin, and then there's no question, a moser is not a direct mazik, he's an indirect mazik, because all he did is show the government agent where the stuff is, and they're the ones who took it. So he's only an indirect mazik, it's only garmi. If you say that garmi is potter, then okay, he's potter. The question is, according to the opinion that we do, then the question is, garmi, you are higher for garmi, and again, we've talked before about what garmi is and how it's different than grama. But Ramban's way of looking at it is whether direct or indirect. A moser is a direct thing that leads to it being lost. So then the question is, also takanas nigzuba moser de mishtabel b'shapil, do we make the same takana, we allow the nimser, the nigzo, the one whose stuff was taken, to swear and be able to collect? Or like, or maybe not. And the answer is teku. So what does it mean, teku? So Tosfos again brings a few different possibilities what teku means. First of all, from the brief that it means lakula, it means that you can't take anything from the moister to pay for it because you can't prove because you don't know whether the halacha is like that. Then Tosfos brings from Rabbi Hai Goin that you'll be entitled, once you swear, you'll be entitled to collect half of what you claim. A taker would mean, according to that way of looking at it, that you split it. Since the suffix, then moment on multiple suffix, chokin. And therefore the nigdol is going to be entitled to half, and then the moister can keep his other half. Then according to Rabbeinu Tam, that we're talking about, that it's the moister's word versus the nimser, that the moister says it was a certain amount, and the nimser says it was more than that, then that's what we're talking about. It's taker, as opposed to if the moister himself says, I kind of don't know how much it was, then the nigzer will be entitled to it.
The moister is a certain amount. So the Lord only works a certain amount, not the balance. And there's no reason you must be convinced if you can get the shore, but it's the most people below that.
No, but here it's actually the nigzol. Here it's actually the nigzol that's swearing. But again, this whole shavuah that we're talking about to collect over here is only the rabban. No, probably not. I don't know. It's true. Mitzvah sheni yochel loshav mishalim, right? But on the other hand, fine. But I don't know if this is the regular case of motive mixus though. So okay, another case. Hahu gavra de botash bekasta for the chavre. There was a certain person who kicked somebody else's safe. Rashi defines kasefta as augas from a nichem beksafim, a box that you put money into. So basically a safe. So he kicked this person's safe, shadi benara, and then threw it into the river. Osam morev omar. So the owner of the safe came and said, "Hachi v'hachi havali v'gavo. I had such and such in there. I demand compensation." Yosef Rav Ashi v'kamayin beis. Rav Ashi was looking into it. Ki hai gavna mai. What would be the din in a case like this? So Ravina asked Rav Acha b'Rei d'Rava, or some say Rav Acha b'Rei d'Rava asked Rav Ashi, who himself was sitting and trying to figure it out. Lab hai namasin. Wouldn't that be exactly the case of our Mishnah? We said the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Yehuda if you light a fire that ends up burning down a building, that you pay everything that was inside the building, because normal for people to put things in their houses the same way. This person is claiming that there was money in the safe. Sure, whatever, that's normal. There was money in a safe. What else? Yeah. Amalei, the Rav Ashi tells him, true. If he was just claiming that there was money in there, I'd have no question. But the case we have over here is he's claiming that there were pearls in there. So now I have the question. Is it normal for people to put pearls in a safe or not? So Tosfos talks about that. We're talking about even if Tosfos, following their shita from before, says what we mean is even if there were pearls in that safe. Still, remember, Tosfos had said before in the case of the purse inside the haystack that it's not a matter of whether there were edim or not. That's how the Ramban learns, and actually that's the Ramban proves his point partly based on this piece of the Gemara over here. But according to Tosfos, it's not a question whether there were edim whether you could find edim afterwards that there were pearls in there or purse inside the haystack. The question is when the person lit the fire, or in this case when the person kicked the safe, could he have had any reasonable expectation that there were pearls in there or that there was a purse in there?
He was a fellow trader.
No, but apparently he wasn't. So therefore, that's the thing. So Tosfos is saying, in accordance with their shitta, even if there are edim afterward that there were pearls in there, you can still argue maybe the person should be potter from the value of the pearls because he can't reasonably have assumed that there are pearls in there. Same logic as we said that he can't reasonably have assumed that there are that there's a purse inside that stack of grain.
In the other
side. okay, I think there is actually an explanation that that's why the Gemara makes a point of mentioning that this person kicked it and it landed in the river. In other words, to say it's not he deliberately picked it up and threw it into the river, that would be mazdi adayim. It was sort of by mistake. So therefore, it's more pshia. Yeah, so it was more pshia rather than hezek b'yadayim. So again, the answer is taken. Amalei Rabbi Yemel Rabbi Ashi. Toin kosa de kasva b'bira mai. What happens if this person whose house was burnt down claims that there was a silver cup in there? Can you take him at his word and make the guy be chai for paying for a silver cup? Amalei chazina. So he says you have to look at the situation. If this person is rich and likely to have silver vessels in his house, Amit literally means, Amit, where Rashi translates it as Asher, but Rashi explains, Sha'om denotes the Kli Kesef. Amit is Meloshin that Omid, that you can estimate based on his known net worth and figure whether he's likely to you. So if he's the kind of person who's likely to have a silver cup in his house, Inami, or also Inish Mehemno, if he's a trustworthy person, Demaska the Inshigabe, where people are likely to deposit things with him for safekeeping, then Mishtab of a Shakal, sure. Then we said before, Takanas Nigzal, he can swear that there was a silver cup there, and he'll be able to collect. Eloi, but if he's not rich and we don't know him to be so trustworthy that people will give him deposits like that, Lav Kol Kamine, then you can't take him at his word. So now the Gemara kind of digresses to a not really totally related topic. And in fact, the Pnei Yeshua asks why the Gemara even brings it in. And basically it's because we were talking about Takanas Nigzol. So the question is, how far does the Takanas Nigzol extend? We said already that Nigzol, we're extending it to the case where somebody lit a fire and burnt down your stuff. We discussed the question, does it also apply to a Moser? So now we're going to deal with a related question. What is the definition of Zela? Or not really what's the definition of Zela, but rather how far does it extend? Namely, Amalei Ada Breder of Ivil Ravashi, Ma ben Gazlan l'Chamsan. What is the difference between a Gazlan and a Chamsan? So Tosfos points out there's places in Sanhedrin, for example, where it talks about there's Gazlanim and there's Chamsanim. So what Tosfos points out, in Lashon HaPasuk, there's no difference. In Lashon HaPasuk, the words Gezel and Chomos are used kind of interchangeably. In the Medrash, it says the idea that Chomos is where you take something that's less than a Shavuot Prota, something like that can't even be judged and based in. That's the famous thing, Kimolar Chomos, Mipneim, by the Mabul, that like a person would bring out beans to sell, and each person would take one bean, which is worth less than a Shavuot Prota, and then soon all of them are gone, that sort of thing. But basically chamas is like smaller scale gezel. But in lashon of the chachamim there is a difference. So what is the difference? Amalei says chamsan yoyiv dami gazlan la yoyiv dami. The difference is a chamsan will pay for what he's taken. He's forcing you to give it to him, but he will pay for it. Gazlan la yoyiv dami, as opposed to a gazlan forces you to give him the thing and doesn't pay for it. Amalei, so he says, Yoyiv dami chamsan karis lei. Why are you calling him a chamsan if he gives the money? Not to say what's wrong with what he's doing. Fine, he's being over on lois achmod, but how can you call him a chamsan? Say, for example, so to go so far as let's say to say that he's posel la'egus, as mentioned in Sanhedrin over there. Of Amar Rav Huna, talu of zabin zavin is vini. We find that Rav Huna said that if somebody is hung up on a wall, if somebody is being pressured, we discussed it in Gittin yet. The main place about it is in Baba Basra. If somebody is being forced to sell, zavini zavini, his sale is a valid sale. So in this case, he was forced to sell. Nice store over here. Shame if anything would happen to it. But after all, they give him money. How do you make these people? Also later. And so it's like Kasha, how do Amar Roitzani, how do Loya Amar Roitzani? The difference is, did he end up saying, I'm willing to sell it or not? If he said, I'm willing to sell it, fine. Zvini, Zvini, after all said and done, it is a valid sale. You can't make the person who forced him to sell it possible later. But if he never ended up saying Roitzani, then fine, he paid him. Very nice, but you can still make him, you can still say that he's possible later.
Did we say that?
No, because we only discussed it briefly over there. We didn't really get into the details.
So if he says
right sounding, you can't consider the person who forced him to be a chamsan. Okay. Could be, but whatever. I mean, if he says right sounding, you can still do it. Mishnah says, Death shiyotza mitachas a patish, if a spark comes out from under a hammer, so you have a blacksmith or whatever who's working in a shop and hammering metal, and a spark comes out, the hizik, and it causes damage. I guess it is a spark, yeah. Chayev, then he's chayev for the damage that it causes. And mind you, there is a bit of discussion among the Rishonim. It's not necessarily a tolda of Eish. I mean, we're mentioning it here in connection with Eish, but not necessarily is it actually in the category of Eish. Even though it could be in the category of Adam Hamazik, that he directly caused the hezek by making the spark fly.
It's
more than grammar. He hit the hammer and the spark went flying. That's if anything, maybe it would be like Sororus. Sororus applies to animals. You were talking about person.
The guy had nothing to do close to the hammer.
So we talked about before the case where a person walks into the store without permission, with permission, etc. But here we're talking about, it's not necessarily a person. We're talking about, let's say, you know, the spark flew out and set somebody's wooden fence on fire. I don't know. Yeah. Well, Pishtun is the next page. Gomel Shaiton Pishtun, if you have a camel carrying a load of flax, and it's passing through Rishus Adabim, the flax, yeah, we mentioned it earlier in the Sefer, yeah, the flax sticks out into the store. The doka b'neder shalchanmani, it catches on fire from the storekeeper's lamp, from his candle, the hidlik sabira, and it burns down the whole building. Bal gomol chayev, so the owner of the camel is chayev because he shouldn't have overloaded an animal like that. We talked about before when we had the whole machlokas of ishim ishim chitzav or ishim ishim mamonai. We said according to Rabbi Yochanan, and it would have to be if the animal stood still, and therefore the building ended up getting burnt down. Anyway. What if the storekeeper put his candle outside? Then the storekeeper is chayev because he should have been careful and then kept it inside. Yeah, that's what we're saying. That the flax got burned and it burned down the store. Yeah. Rabbi Huda says if it was a Ner Chanukah, then you potter because that's supposed to be outside for Suminisa. Well, you can't know that a person's going to be passing by with Pishtun. Well, so the Rambam points out, so why talk out the Chachamim Machayev you? The reason is because the Chachamim figure, you ought to have been Yoshev and Meshama. You should be sitting there and watching that. Yes, you can have your menorah outside for Sumanita, but then you should be sitting and watching it to make sure that nothing catches on fire from it.
So you have to watch it at least 30 minutes.
There's a very interesting thing, by the way, in Rishimus, that ever has a discussion about the mission of a Pnimi Senyanim. I may have mentioned it when we learned this a few weeks ago. I don't remember, but anyway, the gist of it is Pishtun represents the gashmius of the world, which can be refined into something useful. Like Pishtun can be made into wicks, which will give very good clear light. So fine, the Pishtun has its business being in Rishus Rabim, and maybe even there should be, as in the famous Rashi at the beginning of Vayesha, that you have one spark of Yaakov goes and then does something with the flax, but not that it should be. The flax has no business coming into the Chanus, into the Rishus HaYachid, because it's still unrefined, so therefore the Baal HaGomel will be chayev if it does. And conversely, though, if you leave your candle outside and it lights all the flax on fire, you're responsible because, fine, you're supposed to have a candle. You're supposed to have a candle of avodah of elikos, but not so much that it burns out, that it burns away all of gashmius. You still need to have, you know, you need to have rotzei v'shoy. You need to have you live in this world and work with the gashmius to refine it, not to destroy it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, but Ner Chanukah Potter, Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, I agree in general, but Ner Chanukah, we're talking about Mesirat Nefesh, after a period where they wouldn't allow you to have anything to do with Yiddishkeit, if a person goes a little overboard over there with Ruchnius, to the point where they're burning down in Mishkefer. Whereas the Chachamim say, like the Rambam says, even in a case like that, you still need to be Yoshev or Meshama. You still need to have that Alakus should be settled. Yoshev wasn't sitting in the world. It should be settled in the world. It still shouldn't be something that's so intense that it destroys all the Gashmias of the world, even B'ner Chanukah, even in a time like that.
In that case, I'm probably not Shikha B'do Yada.
There's different kinds of Adol Yada. Remember, Chassidus talks about that there's a level at which there's a level of Elikus beyond Oru Haman and Baruch Mordechai, and then that's the level that you're supposed to reach on Purim. tell you one other interesting thing about this Chen v'ni Chayev and Rehudah v'ni Chanukah Potter, a vort from Baruch Meshburj. He says, you know, we say in Chanukah davening, we must see over Yochanan and Kohen Gadol. He learned the Yochanan and Kohen Gadol that's mentioned over there is actually the same one, famous one, who was Kohen Gadol for 80 years and then became a Tzaddik. So, what? No, well, the Gemara in Kiddushin that we learned calls him Yanai, but in other places, in Brachas, for example, the Gemara speaks of him as Yochanan and Kohen Gadol. Anyway, so he says a word like this. Chen v'ni is the same letter as Yochanan rearranged. So the Chen v'ni is Chayav. Chen v'ni is Chayav. However, Rabbi Yehuda Amar b'nei Chanukah Potter, Rabbi Yehuda argues, yes, but first he had the schus that his son, Matisyahu, went on Mesiras Nefesh to save Yiddishkeit, and therefore he ought to be Potter from Onish for the sake of what his son accomplished. Well, it's up to the base of Shemayel, but that was his part. We can deduce from what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, this that he's saying, that you're potter if it was a Ner Chanukah, even though it was outside, you're potter if it burnt the flax, etc. You can learn from him, Ner Chanukah mitzvah la'anicha b'sei chasara, that it must be a mitzvah to put the Ner Chanukah within 10 tefachim of the ground. Because if you're going to argue that it doesn't matter, it can even be higher than 10 tefachim, am I Omer Rabbi Yehuda Ner Chanukah Potter? So why would Rabbi Yehuda say you're potter with a Ner Chanukah? Lay, why can't the owner of the camel argue? Havalei lav nochel, am I lav gomel v'reshlei? Okay, fine, you have to light your menorah outside for sumanisa. Who says you have to put it so low down that it would catch on my flat? Put it higher up. You put it higher up, that you put it so high that a camel with a full load is not going to be anywhere near it. Evidently, then, the implication is there's a mitzvah to put it within 10 tefachim. And we should answer, loy, not necessarily. You can't necessarily prove that from Mishnah. I can tell you that maybe it doesn't matter even if you put it higher than 10 tefachim. So you're arguing that the storekeeper ought to be higher because he could have put it higher. He could have put it higher than the camel on the load. So, given to a mitzvah ka'osik, since, after all, he is occupied with doing a mitzvah, kula hayla after chur rabbanim, and the chachamim maybe didn't want to be matriach him that much because otherwise he might not bother. You can't prove from that, though, that it should be within 10 tefachim. L'maisa, the halacha is that ideally it should be within 10 tefachim. The halacha is kosher within 10 tefachim of the ground. It's kosher if it's higher than that. But even though the Gemara has slugged up the implication from the Mishnah, nevertheless, that is the halacha. In this connection, if you put a Ner Chanukah higher than 20 amos, where then nobody's going to see it as much, and there won't be persuminitza, psula, then it's possible kisuka or kamavui, just like a sukkah, which is where it's possible higher than 20, and just like a mavui, just like the curd or the beam over the front of a mavui, is possible if it's higher than 20. So the same thing with a Ner Chanukah. Tosfos points out that it says psula as opposed to make sure that it's lower, because the halacha is Ner Chanukah has to be lit in its proper position. The same way as, for example, you can't light your menorah indoors and then carry it outdoors and fulfill the mitzvah. By the same logic, if you put it higher than 20, you can't just say bring it down lower than 20. You'd actually have to put it out, bring it lower than 20, and relight it. And that was too much for the Nassim Ramanyumi to bother saying. So he just said psula, and you meant to understand what
you cannot reposition it.
You can't reposition after it's lit, right? Because we were discussing over there in Shabbos, the whole sugya of Chanukah over there in Shabbos, the whole sugya had locha oitz mitzvah or hanocha oitz mitzvah. What the essential mitzvah is accomplished by the lighting or by placing it in the proper position. And the halacha is by placing it in the proper position. So therefore, it has to be placed in the proper position before you light it. Yeah. This is, by the way, our Mishnah is one of the only places in Shas where it mentions Chanukah b'chlal. We know there's a famous verse that Rebbe didn't make a masechta on Chanukah, and they give all the various reasons for it. So this and a couple of other the Mishnah, the Mishnah and the Megillah that mentioned the Kriya for Chanukah. There's one or two other places that mentioned the word Chanukah, but this is one of the only ones. I did. There's a famous verse that's brought from Chassam Sofer. The reason is because Rebbe had Rebbe held it against the Hashmonaim, the fact that they took over the kingship, because the kingship is supposed to be for Malchus Beis David. It's supposed to be for David's family, which Rebbe was descended from, and therefore he left out their Masechta from the Mishnah. So of course, you know, that they were fighting. So of course that occasions a lot of comment. What, you know, what, did he have a vendetta against them, and because of that he's going to leave out an important halacha? So they have a lot of discussion about the pros and cons of that. Includes some other interesting, where Reuven Bar Golias has a vote about it. He says that, after all, what was the whole story of Hanukkah involved? A rebellion against the government. Rebbe is living under the rule of the Romans. Can be very dangerous to suggest that we celebrate a successful revolt against the Greeks, and therefore of necessity he had to leave it out. And then there's a vote with Pnimius Yanyanim, is a vote that has brought in some Sifrich Siddur, the idea that in terms of the relationship of the various Yom Tovim to the various spirits, Hanukkah and Purim correspond to Netzach and Hori. I forget the details exactly, but Pesach corresponds to Chesed, and then Shavuos to Gvura, and then Sukkot to Tiferet, and Purim and Hanukkah correspond to Netzach and Hori. And that's brought in the Siddur Chabad also. So therefore, what do we say? We say in Pesach HaLiyahu, we mention that the various spirits correspond to the parts of the body. Chesed is the right arm, Buddha is the left arm, Tiferet is the torso. Netzach and Hod are the two legs, which are outside the main part of the body. So therefore, in that sense, Purim and Hanukkah are in a certain sense outside the main body of Torah Shabbat Pen, namely the Mishnayos. Because even there is a Masechta Megillah on Purim, but the point that's made is really, out of the four mitzvahs of Purim, the only one that's really discussed in Mishnayos and Megillah is laying in the Megillah. There's really nothing in Mishnayos and Megillah about the dinim of Shalach Manas, the dinim of Matanas Lev Yonim, the dinim of the Soda. All that's in Mishnayos and all that's in Brisas and in the Gemara. Almost nothing about it, really nothing about it in Mishnayos. So therefore, like Purim and Hanukkah are like the two legs which are outside the body of Mishnayos.
It's
a Chassidish Shavuot that's brought that I don't remember now which state it comes from. Maybe Beis Sakha, I don't remember. Hadron Alach HaKoyim.